Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond reading today from the Decatur Herald and Review issue dated October 13, 2015. We'll begin with an article on the first page that was written by Kevin Barlow at the Lee News Service. And the headline is Mitsubishi Union Vote Set Wednesday. The dateline is Bloomington. About 950 members of United Auto Workers Local 2488 are expected to vote during a 24-hour period that begins at 5 a.m. Wednesday on a tentative contract with Mitsubishi Motors North America. Details of that agreement were explained to union members during a meeting Monday at U.S. Cellular Coliseum, said Union President Rod DeVary. Only union members were allowed to attend the meeting. A meeting for retirees is scheduled for today at the Union Hall. A benefits representative will be on hand to answer questions. We wanted to get as much information to everyone as possible, and so we took our time, put together some informational packets, explained the details, and answered some questions, he said. Then they will have a day to think about it. The voting will be at the Union Hall. Several hundred union members attended the meeting Monday, but a handful left after getting the information packet. I know they scheduled this meeting last week, but it happened to fall at the same time of the start of the Cubs-Cardinals game, said Bill Lockman of Peoria. I just wanted to get the information, and I'm sure we will talk about it at work and be informed for the vote Wednesday. The contract expired August 28th, but as negotiations were about to start on a new deal, the company announced plans to close the plant. Production is scheduled to end November 30th, and then layoffs are expected to begin. The plant is expected to close officially in May. A deal is necessary even though the plant will be closing because the employees still have certain rights that the company must uphold, DeVary said. The contract was extended for 1 month and has remained in force on a day-to-day extension. DeVary expects results of the vote to be announced Thursday. I'm just not sure when because we are giving them 24 hours, he said. We're going to have a very tired election committee, but we wanted to do it right and make sure everyone had time to get there. Another article written by Kevin Barlow of the Lee News Service has this headline, Fatal Clinton Fire Possibly Started in Bedroom, and the dateline is Clinton. Officials say a fatal fire early Friday in a Clinton home most likely started in a bedroom, and the cause of another fire that destroyed a rural Clinton home Saturday remains undetermined. Annie Lucille Bolin, 81, was found inside the living room area of a home in the 1400 block of East Main Street. An ambulance crew responding to a medical alert call discovered the fire at 1:39 a.m. Friday, and she was pronounced dead at the scene a short time later. The investigators believe it started at the bed, said Clinton Interim Fire Chief David Dallas. They still have a little more work to do. In the other fire, the Clinton Fire Department was called at 3:49 p.m. Saturday to the home of Tyson Antonia Herman at 12774 Honey Tree Road. It was engulfed in fire when firefighters arrived. Both adults and three children escaped and now are staying at a local hotel. The American Red Cross has been assisting the family. We still have to meet with the family again before we can make a final determination, Dallas said of the fire's cause. We turn now to news about education. This first article is headlined, Box Tops Can Mean Free Money, and this was written by Valerie Wells. The dateline is Decatur. Every day, families are tossing money into the garbage can. Look on the packages of cereal, snacks, paper products, and even office supplies, and it's likely you'll see coupons labeled Box Tops for Education. Each is worth 10 cents. It doesn't seem like much, but it adds up, said Christy Malinix, writing teacher at Parsons School. She collects and turns in the box tops donated to Parsons and did the same when she taught at South Shores School. It isn't unusual to collect a few hundred bucks worth of box tops in a year. She keeps a container on her counter and clips the box tops, tossing the coupons into the container. Families send their collections to school with their kids, and Malinix submits them periodically. Twice a year, the school gets a check. It's free money, she said. There isn't any fundraising involved. Schools need all the extra money they can get. With tight budgets, schools have to find a way to pay for the little extras that the district can't provide. And the great thing about the box tops, Malinix said, is that sometimes stores run promotions with extra box tops points, or packages box tops are worth extra points. Families with children in school are aware of the program and send in their box tops. But people who don't have children at home might not be, she said. If everyone saved the coupons and dropped them off at a school, any school, it could make a big difference. Lisa Tate's kids are in middle and high school now, and their schools don't collect box tops. But she continues to save them and drops them off at Sullivan Elementary School. She's been doing it since her eldest son, William, began attending school. He's 17 and a senior now. I used to take them to Stevenson School when we lived in Decatur, said Tate, who keeps her box tops in the same tall mason jar on her counter where she has always stashed them. Her mother collects the box tops, too. She also plays a game on the Box Tops for Education website that awards extra points to her designated school. And when a box top product, such as Hamburger Helper, is on sale, she stocks up so she'll have more box tops to donate. Usually the deadlines for sending the box tops in are in November and March, said Karen Bartley, a parent volunteer and substitute teacher at Johns Hill Magnet School, who handles the box tops there. But this fall, Box Tops for Education is running a promotion, and schools that got theirs in by October 2nd were entered into a drawing for $2,500. Bartley has high hopes that even if Johns Hill doesn't win that drawing, the school will get one of the smaller prizes. But even without special promotions, Johns Hill collected enough box tops to get $268 in June and another $347 this month. The money goes to the parent-teacher organization's general fund, and teachers write grants for items such as field trips, instruments for the music class, or other things outside the building's budget. Durfee Magnet School holds competitions among classrooms, and one classroom has already collected more than 500 box tops, with school barely underway for the year, said Mary Pratt, who takes care of the coupons there. It goes into our student activity fund, and that's things like we pay for assemblies or the play day, just different activities, she said. All they have to do is tear them off. One family sends the whole box, and I'll take them that way. I don't mind. A photograph accompanying this article features seven children: Alexander Bushnell, Shelley Marston, Wyatt Anderson, J.C. Shelby, and Selena Johnson, Addison Eads, and Calvin Andrews, who are among diligent box top collectors for Dennis School. They are all pictured holding up a sheet of information about the program. Allison Petty, H&R staff writer, submits this article, Battle Within a Battle. Though they played through Overlook Adventure miniature golf course together, the Harshman brothers diverged at the end. Players can vote for their favorite baseball team, Chicago Cubs, St. Louis Cardinals, or other, when they return their golf balls. Wearing an Anthony Rizzo shirt, 12-year-old Gannon Harshman voted for the Cubs, while his 13-year-old brother Alexander was all for the Birds. The siblings were among 15 children who visited the mini golf course Monday as a field trip for the Decatur Indoor Sports Center's day camp. My whole family's Cardinal fans, but I'm a Cubs fan, said Gannon, who added he switched a few years ago and likes that he'll be able to watch the younger Cubs players for a long time. I honestly thought it was the worst decision of his life, and I was going to make him pay, Alexander said, grinning. Every single year they lost 100 games. I made sure that he knew that he switched. Of course, things have changed now that the teams face each other in the National League Division Series. While Alexander expressed some nervousness as the prospect of Cubs pitcher Jake Arrieta, Gannon wasn't about to get cocky. Well, there's 5 games, he said, so we don't know yet. Both agreed that overall their family just loves to watch baseball. In addition to the summer, winter holiday, and spring break, the DISC offers day camp on school holidays, including Columbus Day, President's Day, and Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It's nice to get the kids out of the DSC if we can, said day camp director Kristen Murray. Since the pool is closed, this is just really a fun option. Before they got started, the kids spent some time at the DSC practicing appropriate swings and emphasizing safety. During the afternoon, Murray said the kids would vote on whether to go to the park or watch a movie. The day camp got rave reviews from Luann Baim, Daniel Flores, and Jessica Newland, all 11, who each placed their golf balls in the Cardinals' slot. We do have to obey rules, but we don't have to play a certain game all the time, Daniel said. There's more running around, more free time than other camps I've been to. I definitely want to come back. In another article of local interest about education, Rob Stroud of the Lee News Service has this article headlined, Lakeland May Freeze Adult Education, and the dateline is Mattoon. The Lakeland College Board of Trustees voted Monday night to suspend the college's adult education program, including GED classes, after December 31st. This suspension request is directly caused by the budget impasse in the state of Illinois and the lack of funds coming to the community colleges at this point, said Vice President for Academic Services Jim Hall. President Josh Bullock said he hopes the General Assembly will present legislation before December 31st to authorize the Illinois Community College Board to appropriate funds for adult basic education at community colleges. Without state funding, Hull said, Lakeland is on the hook to pay approximately $200,000 for the adult education program for the fall semester, and would have to pay about that much more to keep the program going in spring 2016. Hull said the suspension also will include sending notices to 3 full-time and 23 part-time employees in the adult education program that their employment will be terminated after December 31st if state funding is not available. Adult education administrators report that the program is serving 170 students during the fall semester, including those in GED, basic nursing assistant, and welding classes. They reported that the program served approximately 450 students in 2014-15 and was on track to serve about that same number in 2015-16. Trustee Mike Sullivan said he did not think approximately $200,000 in savings merited suspending the adult education program when it is serving 170 students. Both Sullivan and Trustee Ann Dieters suggested that Lakeland should look into alternative means of funding the program. This program is very important to the community, Dieter said. I just think the GED program is so important. Hull noted that Lakeland has to give notice about the possible reduction in force to the adult education program employees soon to give them time for notification under state employment laws. Bullock said Lakeland is owed $6.2 million by the state at this point in the fiscal year, adding that state funding is 30% of the budget for the college. He said Lakeland is facing serious concerns about whether it will have the cash flow needed to pay its bills during the coming months. It really is a dire situation in the state of Illinois right now, Bullock said. In a related article about the Illinois budget, there is a column called Illinois and Decatur Should Welcome More Gambling Business. And this was the editor's pick column for today. This guest editorial was written by Steve Horvay, who is owner of Horvay Construction in LLC and Horvay Hospitality Management. We begin. Recently, there have been newspaper articles which suggest that prospective legislation to expand riverboat gambling could include Decatur among other cities. In an editorial dated September 22nd, the Herald and Review cautioned in its headlines that gambling may not be the solution. The editorial said the state needs to understand that a saturated industry may not be able to increase revenues. It further said, in fact, state revenues from all gambling forms are shrinking. Before addressing the tenets of the September 22nd editorial, including the aforementioned statements, it might be appropriate to review the history of gambling in Illinois, including the original legislative intent and the result of now more than two decades of legalized gambling. The Riverboat Gambling Act was enacted in 1990, making Illinois the second state in the nation to legalize riverboat gambling. The act established the Illinois Gaming Board and authorized it to grant up to 10 casino licenses. The state legislative goals were to achieve economic development and to promote Illinois tourism. As the state determines whether to expand riverboat gambling to certain specified communities, it would be instructive to review the following. 1. The financial impact of the industry on the state. The financial impact on the host cities. 3. Whether the original legislative intent was achieved. 4. Whether the originally anticipated social problems materialized and were of sufficient scope to warrant an elimination of riverboat gambling. Finally, a potential expansion of gaming should address the concerns of saturation expressed in the September 22nd editorial. The state of Illinois has collected for its use in excess of $9 billion since the casino industry began in 1991. 10 communities have reaped more than $2 billion in tax revenue, which has helped to stabilize and improve those communities. The state of Illinois had in excess of 7,000 private sector employees in the riverboat gambling businesses in 2014. These jobs supported tens of thousands of family members and provided health insurance and retirement savings. One casino, the Casino Queen in East St. Louis, is employee-owned. It is the first U.S. casino operated under an employee stock ownership plan, and it provides a marvelous example of how individuals, many of them previously unemployed, can become stakeholders in a profitable business and start to live the American dream of success and empowerment. Gaming taxes are the ultimate example of voluntary taxation. Yet gaming taxes provide only a portion of the true economic impact. For example, East St. Louis had 626 casino employees in 2014, Metropolis 595, Rock Island 523, East Peoria 768, and Alton 364. Does anyone believe that those cities would be better off without those well-paying jobs? Have the mayors or city councils of those cities enacted resolutions to reject gaming in their communities? The answer to those questions demonstrates that the original legislative intent was achieved. As the state considers an expansion of the number of riverboat gambling licenses, it has apparently focused primarily on communities adjacent to state lines, including Rockford, Danville, Waukegan, Chicago, and a south suburb of Chicago. The leaders of those communities have enthusiastically endorsed the idea of bringing gaming and out-of-state tax dollars into their communities. It is reasonable to believe that they have done so armed with the knowledge of the adverse consequences of legalized gaming, problem gaming. The problem exists and, unfortunately, is evidence of a true cost associated with economic opportunities associated with casino gambling. The fact that existing host cities continue to support casino gaming is implicit evidence that such costs are outweighed by benefits. The issue of saturation should be factually explored as the state considers an expansion of gambling. Gaming revenue from riverboats and video lottery terminals in bars increased by $271 million from 2013 to 2014. Despite the increase, the state's share of gaming taxes declined for two reasons. First, video lottery and video lottery terminals are taxed at a lower rate than riverboats. That problem is easily solvable. Second, lottery revenue declined and provided less tax revenue, a natural consequence of more attractive gaming options. Finally, as the state considers the issue of expansion, it should look no further than to the Indiana casinos located near Chicago. Those casinos, which attracted significant dollars from Illinois residents, provided gaming taxes last year to the state of Indiana as follows: East Chicago, $70 million, Hammond, $147 million, Gary, $34 million, and Michigan City, $46 million. Are there any Illinois taxpayers who would prefer that $297 million in gaming taxes remain in Indiana? The reality is that businesses and states regularly compete for customers from across state lines. Is gaming different than manufacturing or technology in that regard? Of course not. Illinois should not cede its gaming and tourism dollars to Hoosiers or Badger. Finally, as the state considers an expansion of gambling, I would respectfully assert that cities located in the heart of the state deserve the same economic opportunities as the cities located near the state borders. Decatur should enthusiastically welcome an industry that would provide hundreds of new jobs and millions of dollars of direct construction and development, all without taxpayer subsidies. The city could assuredly use hundreds of thousands of dollars of gaming tax revenue annually, not to mention the incremental property tax, sales tax, and hotel tax. It is clear from video lottery terminal revenue statistics that Central Illinois has multiple metropolitan areas that are currently underserved, including Decatur. Decatur is a wonderful city with a rich heritage in manufacturing and agriculture. It would be fantastic to develop a similar tradition in entertainment and tourism. The citizens of Decatur would welcome the opportunity to further introduce the residents of Springfield, Bloomington, Champaign-Urbana, and Terre Haute to our restaurants, our golf courses, our university, and our casino. We respectfully ask that the legislator allow us to showcase our community and demonstrate our motto to our neighboring cities, Decatur, we like it here. Again, this was a guest column, a guest editorial, written by Steve Horre, who is owner of Horve Construction. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the October 13th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.